This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Zona Plus, an effective non-drug treatment for high blood pressure. I use it with my patients at the Hoffman Center all the time. As a listener to Intelligent Medicine, the company is offering you special savings of $50 and free shipping. To find out more, go to TryZonaNow.com or call toll-free 1-866-669-9662. Be sure to mention Dr. Hoffman to get your $50 savings and free shipping. That's 1-866-669-9662 or tryzonanow.com. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, today with Hoffman Center Nutritionist Layla Mudin. And we've got questions. Questions come to us via radio program at AOL.com. Keep those questions and comments coming. And Layla, what's our next question, please?
We've got an email from Alice. Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. Do you have any tips for the treatment of trigeminal neuralgia? Supplements, therapy?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
It's a challenging condition, and of course it's a terribly painful condition that is like a migraine in a nerve. You know, it's sometimes continuous, but often it's intermittent. The pain comes and goes. It's excruciating. I'm told it's one of the worst pains in the world. Sometimes it responds to acupuncture. Sometimes it responds to B12 shots. I just spoke to a patient who said that his trigeminal neuralgia really responded well to B12 shots, so it's worth a try. And those would have to be done, you know, not just one, but do a series of daily B12 shots. We might give some B12 to patients to self-administer, teach them how to give themselves shots so they don't have to come to the doctor's office every day, and then do it every day for a couple of weeks or a month. And since B12 has, we're not talking about B12 deficiency here. We're talking about B12 used therapeutically at really super physiologic doses to suppress pain. So that might be
helpful.
It's
not about a low B12 at all. It's medicine.
Yeah. It's B12 as a medicine, as a therapeutic agent. In the absence of documented B12 deficiency. Then there's the more high-tech treatments, which are various types of zapping treatments, which, you know, can be CyberKnife or other forms of treatment that try to knock out the nerve. Neurosurgery, you know, various kinds for extreme cases. And then, of course, there are the medications, but the medications only blunt the pain. You use Neurontin and Lyrica, sometimes Elavil to take the edge off the discomfort. But it's a challenging condition to treat, for sure.
And this can be caused by a virus more than?
Yeah. But using antiviral medication is not generally that effective. So we can't just say, oh, let's bolster the immune system, you know, use lysine or something like that. I'm not sure that that's, you know, theoretically, since it's a virus, something like lysine might be helpful or something to bolster the immune system might be helpful. But it doesn't really, those things don't really cut it for that type of pain, in my opinion. I don't know. Maybe somebody, this will trigger somebody's recollection that one or another nutritional supplement regimens really help them. And we always like to hear from listeners who want to weigh in with comments or suggestions. So even if you think it's some homemade brew that you tried that you found particularly helpful for your condition, we'd love to hear about it.
Sure. We'd love to check it out. Oh, best of luck to you, Alice. Hope you feel better.
Yep.
All right. We've got an email from Gabriella to Dr. Hoffman and Layla. Based on the study by the Albert Einstein College of Medicine that looked at lower IGF-1 levels associated with longevity, should I ask my doctor for a prescription for metformin, even though I'm not diabetic?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm very familiar with that because, number one, that's my alma mater, Albert Einstein College of Medicine. And they're undertaking a trial there. Looking at older individuals in their 80s, 90s, and even some centenarians to discover what it is about their diet, their lifestyle, or their genetics that makes them live long lives. It's under the direction of Professor Barzilay over there. And recently, kind of coincidentally, I ran into a guy. Actually, I know this guy from the Y where I work out. And I, you know, he was on the train platform and I started talking to him. And then we got on the train. We sat next to each other. And he said, you know, guess how old I am? And I said, well, I think you're about 75. And he said, no, I'm 85. And I said, wow, you're in excellent physical condition.
Wow.
And I said, you know, you should be in one of, in that study at Einstein, where they're studying, you know, the ingredients for longevity. And he said, I am in that study, as a matter of fact.
Oh, my.
Yeah. So, so what they're doing is, he says he goes in every year and they do complete physical and ask him a bunch of questions and see if anything's changed. And, they haven't drawn any conclusions yet. They're particularly interested in Ashkenazic Jews or Jews of Eastern European background. And of course, that's, you know, pretty, they have a pretty good pool of which to draw on up there in the Bronx, where there's a lot of elderly retired Eastern European Jews. And of course, this is Albert Einstein College of Medicine, which is a subsidiary of Yeshiva University, which is, you know, it's not a parochial school, but they have a particular interest in issues related to Jewish people. So they're also as part of this study, they've introduced a study arm where they're using metformin as an experiment to see whether metformin has a life-prolonging effect. And that might be due to some intrinsic property of metformin. We know that metformin is an insulin regulator. I mean, it's a diabetes medication, so it actually helps to reduce high levels of insulin in type 2 diabetics and make insulin work more efficiently. And thereby, it might have an influence on whatever physiologic processes are associated with aging. We already know that metformin may have a cancer preventive effect because cancer loves sugar, and insulin drives cancer. And so, you know, we...
Very intimate relationship between insulin and cancer,
There's some studies underway looking at men with prostate cancer, and they're giving them metformin to see if that prevents recurrence. And I often, in the men that I see who have prostate cancer, when I suggest vitamins and supplements and diet and lifestyle, I often give them the option of taking metformin. However... there's some question as to whether metformin works in otherwise healthy individuals. Like I personally, trying all these, you know, life extension measures and, you know, diet and exercise, and I'm taking a million supplements, but I wouldn't consider taking metformin because I don't have any vestige of insulin resistance or, you know, problems with sugar regulation. So it might be that it only works on people who are prone to those problems.
Right, right. And alternatively, I want to say to Gabriella, you don't want to take metformin in lieu of a healthier diet. If you're on a lower carb diet, you may not need the metformin at all, but it's not going to fix the problem of a not great diet. So you want to eat a diet low in sugar, low in refined carbs.
So the word isn't out on metformin. I think that probably within the next 2, certainly 5 years, we'll have results of some of these studies. And then, you know, if it pans out, then maybe we'll add metformin to our list of anti-aging measures. But until such time, I wouldn't use it unless there was a reason to help control blood sugar. Many of our patients find that metformin helps them lose weight, maybe curbs their carbohydrate cravings. Certainly, it's an old-fashioned diabetes medication. It actually, compared to all the whole raft, and there must be 20 or several dozen new diabetes medications. In a recent study, the only one that was shown to prolong life, because the other ones will lower blood sugar and they'll lower hemoglobin A1C, they'll fix your numbers. But the only one that actually affected the endpoint, the significant endpoint of does it make you live longer as a diabetic, is metformin. Good old fashioned metformin is about a 50-year-old medication.
And you know, one of the caveats, however, is we know many drugs not only have side effects, but they can also cause some nutrient depletions. If you're taking metformin, you want to make sure that you take supplemental B12 and folate. as it can deplete those. Mm-hmm. And another side effect of metformin that some people experience is diarrhea.
Yes.
Which can take a little time to get over, or they'll need to change it to an extended release or a long-acting.
Right.
Is that right, Dr. Hoffman?
Yes, indeed. Yeah. And this actually has led some people to hypothesize that some of the effects of metformin might be on the microbiome, that it might alter the microbiome in a favorable way, thus affecting blood sugar or metabolism. Because we know that the bacteria in your gut actually have an influence on metabolism. That's probably not the only pathway by which it exerts an effect on blood sugar and insulin. But maybe there's, at least in part, a microbiome effect.
Yeah. So scientists are finding what centenarians have in common is low insulin, lower blood sugar, low triglycerides.
Mm-hmm.
So this is one of the things. It's really interesting. All of that can be achieved with proper diet.
And usually high cholesterol as opposed to low cholesterol.
Yes.
Low cholesterol is a risk factor for dying past the age of 85. And so we'll see these people with astronomically high cholesterol in the high 200, sometimes over 300, who are just hanging in there, and their HDL may be, 80 or 90 or 102, and mm-hmm. they're just doing great.
Yeah. And it's been shown that people in their 80s with an average total cholesterol of about 268, they live longer.
Yeah.
Terrific. All right.
So eat those egg yolks.
Eat those egg yolks.
Right. Here's a good rule
of thumb.
Thank you, Gabriella. Whatever they told you to do in 1985, do the opposite. So they told you don't drink coffee. Okay, now drink coffee. They told you.
Yeah.
They told you that alcohol was good for you. Maybe not so good. Chocolate bad? No, chocolate's good. they told you, don't eat any dairy fat.
They told you don't eat saturated fat. Have vegetable oil instead.
No, that's
just the opposite.
It's a good rule of thumb. Is just look up dietary recommendations. Actually, many of them haven't changed since 1985.
Yeah.
Unfortunately,
eat low fat foods and not fat foods.
Right.
Eat
right.
as much as you want.
Yeah.
Nope.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you for your question, Gabriella. All right. We have an email from Lisa. Lisa writes, Dr. Hoffman, my husband is 51 years old and had open heart surgery a couple months ago to replace two valves and had one bypass. The heart and lung damage occurred 25 years ago due to the radiation treatments used to treat non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Well, now he's being prescribed a blood thinner, a statin, a blood pressure medicine, but can't we do more natural things instead of having to rely on pharmaceutical medication?
Mm-hmm. Well, okay, so this is an interesting situation because we now know that a lot of people who've had radiation, especially for Hodgkin's disease, but sometimes for breast cancer, the radiation is directed to the chest. The heart is located in what's called the mediastinum. And, unfortunately, when you're trying to zap the lymph nodes in the chest, the heart is adjacent and the heart has been zapped. And so people check in with problems sometimes 20, 30 years later because the radiation acts slowly to damage the arteries. It's an example of free radical damage. Free radical damage takes its toll over time, just like it did in the survivors of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Many of them came down sick decades after surviving the initial blast. And similarly, we see with breast cancer, sometimes radiation for breast cancer is causing heart problems, heart failure or accelerated atherosclerosis because it would damage the arteries. And in this case, it may have damaged the arteries. We don't know because this person might have developed heart disease with or without radiation, but it certainly may have damaged the valves. Look, it's pretty much once you've had bypass surgery, you have what are called non-native arteries. And non-native arteries are much more prone to atherosclerosis. And so studies do suggest that statins have a protective effect, at least in that instance. I mean, these arteries are taken either from your internal mammary artery or they're actually veins taken from your legs. And you may take, 50 or 60 years to develop atherosclerosis in a normal adult prone to heart disease. But once you put those new non-native arteries or in their vessels in, they can clog up within 3, 5, or 8 years. So there is a compelling reason to use statins, unfortunately, in this case. As to the blood pressure medication, there may be a need to keep the blood pressure normalized due to the valve replacements, because the heart may have been enlarged because of previous valvular problems, and you actually have a lower threshold for putting patients on blood pressure medication when they've had valvular surgery, because you don't want to put extra strain on the heart. And then when it comes to the blood thinner, unfortunately, certain valves really require that you thin the blood, because the valves are sticky and platelets will adhere to them and you can get blood clots. So, I don't see an out with these particular three medications. I do see a need for consultation, what kind of nutritional support is compatible with this situation. But, I'm not one of these doctors. There are some holistic doctors. Probably they're few and far between, because most, I think, are well-trained and understand the role that medications play. But some practitioners just, are adamantly opposed to all medications. And I think you got to know when to hold and when to fold when it comes to medications. Be selective.
Yeah. Lisa, thank you for your email, and we wish your husband a speedy recovery.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We have an email from Patricia. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, is D-mannose effective for both preventing and curing urinary tract infection? We've had good success with D-mannose.
And, where I really find it quite remarkable is that we've had patients with multiple sclerosis, especially women. And one of the problems with multiple sclerosis is that you lose bladder control to some extent. So you may have what's called urinary retention incomplete emptying of the bladder. And what that does is it keeps the urine in the bladder, and that provides a real culture medium, as it were, for the bacteria. The bacteria, grow on the urine that remains in the bladder. And so they constantly get urinary tract infections. That's a hallmark of moderate to severe multiple sclerosis. And so we've taken some of these patients, we work on their MS, but we've given them D-mannose for prevention, and they say, as long as I take the D-mannose, I don't get an infection. It's remarkable. So it probably is more effective as a preventive. I'm not sure that if you have a rip-roaring infection, taking D-mannose is going to make it go away. But if you are prone to infections, it's a good preventive. And the dosage would be?
A dosage is about a half teaspoon in some water, twice a day for maintenance. It could be as much as 6 times a day for an active infection.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's helpful that way.
I would agree.
I know there's some good evidence on cranberry.
Right. Well, there has been good evidence on cranberry. Recently, this is something that I've really drilled down on, because recently there was an article that got a lot of attention that said, forget your cranberry juice, it's worthless for your UTIs. And as a matter of fact, I'm planning to have as a guest a researcher who is from Rutgers University, did you know that you may have thought that Maine is the major cranberry growing region of the United States, but actually it turns out New Jersey is. And so it makes sense that the state university of, the Rutgers is actually New Jersey State University. So they call it Rutgers, but it's actually, New Jersey State. Rutgers has a center, where they do specific research on the health benefits of cranberries. Now, we've known that cranberries have heart benefits because they have beneficial proanthocyanins, maybe brain benefits, immune system benefits. But also there's plenty of studies that say that it may prevent or help treat urinary tract infections. But the latest study says no. And I looked at that study, and it's very flawed, because what they did is they looked at kind of the worst-case scenario. They looked at elderly, debilitated, mostly women in nursing homes. They didn't even check to see whether they got less urinary tract infections. They just looked at their urine and they measured the bacteria in their urine, and they found that with or without the cranberry pills, and they gave them a meager dose of one capsule twice daily, 500 milligrams, it didn't really
Which
change
may
the
not
bacteria
be
count. It didn't change the bacteria count, but These women didn't have urinary tract infections. They had what's really common in elderly debilitated people, which is bacteriuria, which is the presence of bacteria. And so it may, the study may demonstrate that cranberry in low doses doesn't prevent bacteria in very weak and debilitated patients, but it doesn't speak to the issue of whether a younger woman or a healthier person, male or female, might achieve some degree of prevention from cranberry concentrate. I prefer that to the juice because the juice is always sweetened one way or the other. Or the capsules, the concentrated capsules, or perhaps maybe people need to take more. But I think for JAMA to publish this article, poor study, and draw the unwarranted conclusion that people should not bother to take cranberries that's kind of bridge too far in terms of what that study says.
Not to mention a waste of our taxpayer dollars.
But you know,
it's funded by grants.
Many of these conventional journals, they have a tendency to very eagerly report negative results about supplements.
There's an agenda there. Pat, thank you for your question.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. We've got one from Virginia. Virginia writes, love you guys. May I have supplement recommendations for my 14-year-old goddaughter? She started high school and is quite stressed, and her husband's fear fish oil for the blood-thinning aspect.
Well, that's an unwarranted fear because, you know, there's no reason to – so many people take fish oil and don't experience blood-thinning effects. And the only potential issue for blood-thinning is maybe someone who already has bleeding issues – low platelets or something, highly predisposed to bleeding. Even people who take blood thinners can safely take fish oil, usually without problems. So, you know, we can already sense that these, the parents are kind of supplement averse or scaredy cats when it comes to any kind of supplement intervention. But it, for this, you know, how old is this teenager? 14?
14 year old.
Well, these kids are on notoriously poor diets. And, and this is also a time of maximal stress and growth. So I would recommend vitamin D, certainly, and I would recommend 2,000 international units. Because really, this is the time where you lay down the foundation for your bone structure for the rest of your life. And if you don't achieve optimal bone density by the age of 25 or 30, you know, that's the point at which you begin to lose bone density. So this is an important time to consolidate your gains. And the vitamin D would be well warranted, but also just as a kind of an insurance policy, nutritional insurance policy, because of you know, kind of picky diets and, you know, sporadic eating habits. And some of these young gals tend to go a little bit towards the, shall we say, the vegetarian end of things. I would recommend,
or just towards fast food altogether.
Fast food potentially, a good multi. You know,
a good multi, absolutely. Supply. And I think the B vitamins in a good multi can help address the stress aspect. Very helpful that way.
But I would revisit, I mean, look, I guess the parents, they're going to be hard to convince because they've already been there. You know, the well has been poisoned for them, so to speak. They've heard, you know, read an article saying that fish oil could be dangerous. It thins the blood and that, you know, has put them off of it. But one of the things, like when I see a young kid who is stressed, part of the workup is always, I always measure their essential fatty acids because anxiety and depression are highly correlated with low levels of omega-3 fatty acids. And this is a population highly at risk for that because many kids are finicky. I know that when I was that age, I didn't eat fish. I was really picky. And, you know, that can worsen adolescent anxiety and depression. Omega-3 fatty acids are very important. And, you know, if she doesn't want to eat, you know, fishy fish, kids have, you know, taste aversion to fish, then take the calcium.
And then to add insult to injury, if she's eating crackers and breads and things that have a lot of vegetable oil, omega-6, kind of makes the problem worse.
Right.
Because then that's...
We look at the omega 3-6 ratio, exactly, the omega 6 oils also render the omega 3 less bioavailable, and the omega-6 are pro-inflammatory. So so that would, I would love to test that kid for levels of that. And then, see, at least if that kid was tested for that, you could present to the parents like, look, there is a deficiency here, then it might, you know, that's one of the reasons I test. I test because I like to give people a report card. Like, here it is in, you know, this is in a glaring example of where your nutrition is inadequate. Let's test your vitamin D. Let's test your B12. Let's test your omega-3 fatty acids. And then on the basis of that, we'll supplement you, and we'll, then we'll see if we're correcting the problem. And that can make a case for a more guided nutritional experience as opposed to, oh, you know, just take every vitamin in the health food store.
Yeah, yeah. Virginia, thank you for your email. Best of luck to your goddaughter.
Mm-hmm. Well, that just about wraps it up because we're out of time. But I want to thank your listeners for, I guess it's a good sign that we are inundated with questions. You can send your questions to radioprogram@AOL.com. Quite a lot of really nice comments. People really enjoy these podcasts. And we love doing them, don't we, Layla?
Yes, absolutely. Look forward to it every week. Yep.
To help us defray the costs that are associated with these free podcasts, please visit drhoffman.com or hoffmancenter.com and check out the store where you'll find many of your supplement needs are addressed. We carefully curate the supplements that are in our Hoffman Center dispensary. We offer them to patients, and the self-same supplements are available to you as listeners. So please avail yourself of the opportunity. Thanks for joining us. Thank you, Layla, today.
Thank you, everybody.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. This is our weekly Q&A with Layla, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.
This is Layla Mutin, RD. I see patients every day here at the Hoffman Center. If you require a nutrition consult with me, but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.